science enthusiasts. My name is Jason Zakowski. I'm a high school chemistry teacher and your host. You probably know our dogs, Bunsen and Beaker, from social media. They're the science dogs. This show takes what's best from their account and swirls it into podcast form. Every week, we're going to take a look at something timely in science and do a deep dive into some pet science. We also have an expert guest who enthralls us and educates us with their knowledge in their area of science. This is the Science Podcast. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the Science Podcast this week. I hope everybody out there is happy and healthy. Well, let's talk about coronavirus because it's everywhere. And we're going to talk about something close to home. Our numbers in Alberta have been going up quite dramatically since we've opened up our economy. And this was something that was going to happen from opening up the economy. But our numbers are actually quite high comparatively where they were in the past. Our zone now has over 100 active cases. So it went from, you know, very few, like 5 to 10, to over 100. Could be just from people gathering and relaxing what they're supposed to be doing with social distancing. I have been noticing more people wearing masks. I think that's probably going to be addressed by our health officer. So close to home, our province has now the highest capita of coronavirus in all of Canada. So we've seen a dramatic increase. On the family front, we took a quick trip into the mountains on the weekend, and it was great to just be around that nature. I have this inflatable kayak that is pretty rugged, so we blew that up, and we took the dogs out onto this glacier lake that it was just the views were gorgeous. The pictures on social media doesn't do the area justice, and we did some hiking with the dogs, and Beaker, being a puppy, did so good. She is such a good swimmer, and Bunsen is not great at being... Bunsen doesn't like the water that much, but he did great on the kayak. He really did. So that was so much fun. All right. On the podcast this week, in science news, we've got a really fun article about the sun. I'm not going to give too much away. In pet science, we're going to talk about giving your dog or your cat a little scratch on the head and what the science of that says. And our amazing expert this week in the expert section is Ashley Walker, who is a planetary astrochemist who studies the moons in outer space. So cool. Can't wait for you guys to listen to that interview. Hey dogs, what do you call a sunburnt librarian? Well read. Okay, on with the show. Because there's no time like science time. This week in science news, it's all about our nearest star. The thing that keeps us alive, the blazing light in the sky, it's our sun. So you may not know it, but there's a little spacecraft called the Solar Orbiter that has been doing a great job lately of snapping pictures of the sun and sending it back to us on Earth. It's got a lot of great new technology and photo capturing abilities, and they've made a massively crazy cool discovery about our sun. Now, you'd think that we would know everything about the sun there is because it's so big and we can just look at it. Like you can go outside and say, oh, there's the sun. But there's a ton of stuff about the sun that is really mysterious. And the Solar Orbiter spacecraft that was built by both NASA and the ESA, that's the European Space Agency, is basically beaming back pictures that is blowing everybody's minds. From the Royal Observatory of Belgium in Brussels, David Brenhams talked about how the images that we're getting back from the sun are so close and so clear. Things that were never thought to be on the sun are being discovered. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So the pictures that came back, and I just grabbed a couple quotes of what the scientists were saying about these pictures. Some of the quotes are, "This isn't possible. It can't be that good." So when some of your quotes are that crazy, you know what they've discovered is really interesting. So what did they discover? They discovered campfires on the moon. Anybody that likes camping knows that a campfire is the social meeting point of everywhere in the campground. At night, you can roast up some s'mores. And for the people that don't know what a s'more is, it's a graham cracker, a roasted marshmallow, and a piece of chocolate. And you mush it together and it gets all melty. There's some people not from North America that didn't know what a s'more was. But anyways, these campfires on the moon are like teeny tiny baby solar flares. So to give you an idea, a solar flare is this magnetic outburst that's associated with sunspots on our sun. And sunspots are cooler areas of the sun. And it blasts radiation out into space. And solar flares can last a long time, like minutes to an hour. And they release a gab-smocking amount of energy, like so much energy that we study them with X-rays. Solar flares are huge and campfires are much smaller, about a million or a billion times smaller. Now, that seems like they're tiny, but you have to remember that our sun is enormous. A million Earths can fit within our sun. And solar flares are truly epic in size. When they blast that radiation, and sometimes they actually eject coronal stuff into outer space, it's called a coronal ejection, that can actually dwarf the size of our entire planet, this like radiation burp that happens. So when you shrink that down a million or a billion times, it's still pretty big. These campfires, these mini solar flares that the Solar Orbiter found, are between 500 kilometers to 100 kilometers across. So they're still really big. They're about the size of, you know, a country in Europe. Why is this a big deal? Why do we even care about this? Two reasons. One, curiosity and wonder. It was something we didn't know before, and now we know it. And the scientists that are studying it are asking all of these amazing questions like, what do they do? Are solar flares and campfires similar? How are they linked? Are they different? So when you discover something new, you have questions about it, and questions can only lead to further information. So from a purely scientific point of view, for people that are interested in outer space, that's very fascinating. Now, a bigger reason why this is a big deal is it could help be a puzzle piece to explain why the area on the outside of the sun called the solar corona, that atmosphere is way hotter than the surface of the sun. So it's actually hotter in this atmosphere than, like, if you were to touch the surface of the sun, don't do that. But the coronal atmosphere is a million degrees hotter. Scientists are still trying to puzzle out why that is. And perhaps, even though these individual campfires are very small, maybe they're all over the sun, like they're everywhere on the sun, and they're just burping out little bits of radiation. And that's enough to heat the atmosphere, potentially. It's just a puzzle piece. Now, the Solar Orbiter hasn't gotten as close as it's going to get. So we're going to have more things to talk about with this little craft in a few months. It's going to get within 42 million kilometers of the sun. Now, that's really exciting because that's really, really close. I know 42 million kilometers seems so far away, but you have to remember the sun's super dangerous and super hot. It's also going to fly over the poles of the sun. So we're going to get some really cool pictures of the top and the bottom of the sun. Can't wait. So all in all, this news is hot, hot, hot. I know, it's another bad joke. But that's science news for this week. This week in pet science, we're going to talk about the science of scratching your cat or your dog on their head. Now, Bunsen has a sweet spot underneath his ears. Like, he's got those great big floppy ears. And he's got that huge head. Like, his head is so big. He loves it when you go underneath his ear flaps, like under where, like there's no fur under there, and you scratch. And it might be, like, some people think it's kind of gross because there's like dog ear wax in there, but he loves getting scratched right there. He makes this crazy groaning sound. He goes, ooh, it's actually terrible. And he just loves it so much. He does it for all of us in their family. And when random people do it, they're kind of taken aback because he just loves it so much. It's the same sound he makes like after he's done a hard day's work and he flops on the ground. He goes, like an old man. And Beaker loves getting her ears scratched and her head scratched too. She moves a lot more than Bunsen, but she does. She really likes getting her head and her ear scratched. And cats do too. Now, I'm allergic to cats, but I know cats love getting their head scratched. And cats do this thing where they like smush their faces on everything. So let's talk a little bit about the science about head scratches. Does the science say they like it? Do they do it for other reasons? Well, the data from animal studies seems to show that cats and dogs react to head scratches differently, but there are some similarities. One of the big similarities as to why animals, cats and dogs, and in either some other animals too, birds even, like head scratches, is that they crave our attention. And when we give them our attention, that's a win for them. So some animals are attention seeking. And when you scratch their head, you reward them. And that's one area, but there's also practical reasons also for both cats and dogs. Like, cats and dogs can't reach the top of their head with their paws, or like to lick the top of their head. So they can't groom the very, very top of their head. Bunsen is not flexible at all. There's no way he can't watch. He can't move his shoulder like Beaker can. Beaker's like holding a cat almost. She's very like bendy, and Bunsen's like super rigid. So there's no way, there's like places on Bunsen he can't get. And maybe that's why he likes his head scratched so much, is it's just an impossible place for him to get to. Now for cats, when we go into a little bit deeper, why do they like the head scratch? Well, when animal scientists study cats in litters, the mum and the litter mates groom each other, and they lick the top of each other's heads, especially the mum licking the kittens. And it's a comfort thing. So a lot of animal scientists think that's why cats like getting the top of their head scratched. It's a grooming service. They get a win from getting your attention, and they get groomed. Now, another scientific reason why cats like getting their head scratched is, while cats have glands all over their body that release scents, most of the glands on a cat are in their face and their head. So that's probably why you see a cat, rubbing itself, its face on things, and rubbing its head on things. And the cats do that to leave their scent on things. So cats also do this thing where they bunt a human. They come up and they smush their head on you, on your leg, or on you. And then if you scratch them, they like it even more. And it's kind of funny. Cats do that to mark you as friendly territory. So they're kind of marking you as theirs, sort of, or their area. But they also do it for affection. So it expresses that they like you, and it expresses that they have a connection with you. Maybe even love you. So that's really cute. Now, dogs, on the other hand, are less and more complicated. Not all dogs like head scratches. Dogs that have been trained with physical violence, like if a dog isn't doing something right and you smack it on the head, and you really shouldn't do that. There's only very few situations where you should actually hit a dog on the head. Obviously, if you're getting attacked by a dog, but you should use positive reinforcement, not negative reinforcement. And also, dogs that have dominance issues. We talked in a previous podcast how a hand to a dog looks like a mouth. So coming at their head with your hand is maybe a little disconcerting. And you might see that with dogs that are really dominant. They kind of rear up and they try and smoke another dog with their paw. Now, I don't want to say about Beaker, because she does that to Bunsen all the time. She like jumps on him and tries to jump on his head and with her mouth or with her paws. So maybe she's trying to assert dominance on Bunsen. He just puts up with it, and then he body checks her into next week. Now, if a dog has had proper training and is properly socialized, dogs love a head scratch, but they don't have the same kind of glands that a cat has. So their love of a head scratch just comes from the bond with their humans. It's comfort, it feels good, and they love you. And that's cute. So both cats and dogs have their reasons for getting a head scratch. And lastly, it could be just because their head is itchy. That's what one animal scientist said. It just could be because their head is itchy and you're just helping them out. Oh, well, that's pet science for this week. Before we get to the interview section, I just want to tell everybody a little bit about how the podcast is made possible. It's made possible, you can't see me pointing, but it's made possible by people just like you. If you've been listening to the show and you like the content, consider signing up on our Patreon page as a patron. The podcast, unfortunately, isn't free to run, even though we really enjoy doing it. It's been a great addition to our lives to share more in-depth science news than our Twitter accounts and definitely Instagram can allow. Our Patreon page is patreon.com/BunsenBurner, and there are 4 tiers of support. If you head over there, you can see the different monetary amounts, but the lowest one is only $5 a month. That's not that bad. We do about 4 or 5 shows a month. 4 shows, great education and entertainment for $5. Can't beat it. Plus, we send out perks. The other way the show makes money is through merchandise sales. We've worked with a cartoonist to deliver some amazingly adorable merchandise on our merchandise shop, and that's at www.bunsenburnerbmd.com. The links are in the show notes, and you can peruse the adorable merchandise. Thanks, guys. Now on to the interview. On the Science Podcast, in the Ask an Expert section, I am delighted to have Ashley Walker with us today. Ashley is an astrochemist and a planetary scientist, and is currently an intern at NASA. How are you doing today, Ashley?
I'm good, and you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to talk to you about space and planets and things like that. Just so people know, where are you calling into the podcast from?
Chicago.
Okay. And you and yours doing okay with the coronavirus? Staying safe?
Yes, we are. I mean, there's been a few kitty fight breakups, but other than that, we've been doing well.
That's great. Now, Ashley, I'm going to get right to it because I have such a fascination with space. Could you tell everybody a little bit about your training and your education in science to be an astrochemist and a planetary scientist?
Sure. So I had a non-traditional path, but I received my bachelor's in chemistry from Chicago State University.
And woo, go chemistry!
And they just so happened to like put an emphasis in astrochemistry. And I was just like, wait a minute, that's not even a thing in the school. And I was just like, well, you do enough astrochemistry research. We thought we'd just say it. It sounds cool. So I became the school's first astrochemist in the 152 years that Chicago State has been around. In addition to that, so my training is in planetary atmospheres, and previous training included planet formation. Wow. So I study icy moons such as Titan, which is my favorite moon, should I say, because it's not a planet, but I want it to be a planet. So
me too.
So I studied for my senior thesis defense, I studied its aerosol analogs, and we wanted to see like what chemical composition could come about with hazes. And it was really, really cool to study that because, I mean, it was something that was new for me, but it also helped me understand like coursework, which includes thermodynamics and PChem. So it helped me understand it a little bit better. Currently at NASA, I am in the astrochemistry lab, and I'm still working on icy moons.
That is so cool. Okay, so I've got a couple questions for you. The first one is, you have training in chemistry. Mm-hmm. Where did that morphed itself into astrochemistry and planetary science. When you were young, was science and chemistry something that grabbed you, or was there like a point in your life where something clicked and you're like, that's for me. That type of science is my jam.
So it's like a little bit of both. So basically I wanted my parents to buy me a star out of the sky. And don't know what I was going to do with the star. I really don't. To this day, I don't even know what I was going to do with the star. Like, what do you do with the star that's in the sky? Because I wanted it and I was very spoiled. And I was just like, Mom, Dad, buy me a star. And my parents were just like, okie dokie. And then I wanted to be a moon as well. So my uncle decided, I don't know why I wanted to be a moon, but my uncle decided that he took upon himself to buy me a ruby red telescope. And so there are times where I did go to Atwood Planetarium, and they would have an exhibit hall where you jump on the different scales to see your weight on the different planets. And then I didn't go back. And so my interest kind of dissipated from that at that time. So from that time until I was about 10, until mm-hmm. I was like a teenager, I wanted to be a professional choreographer for Beyonce, and that did not happen, which is I'm very devastated, by the way. And then moving forward, it kind of came back when I was in junior college. And so I was in and out of junior college, and that's when it came back and I decided to switch my major from business to chemistry.
I'll tell you, I love when I weigh myself on the moon scale. That is my favorite scale to tell me my weight. That is, I love the number that it tells me there.
It makes you feel better, doesn't it? I don't know, it makes me feel better. But then again, I get that because I'm like, I'm not that big, so...
After the initial kind of like the bit of science early, and then you got into wanting to be a choreographer for Beyonce, did you take dance classes? Were you in dance, or were you just like enamored with Beyonce because she's so amazing?
So actually, during the time I wanted a star, I was So during the time I wanted a star, I actually was in professional dance lessons.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so growing up, I've always took dance really serious. I was a cheerleader. I was also a background dancer for some local Chicago, up-and-coming Chicago artists, and they had my cousins at a dance group and stuff like that. So I definitely wanted to become a legit dancer and choreographer for Beyonce, and that did not happen. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sad. But, you know, it brought me to where I am today, which I'm very, very grateful for.
You know, although what? Instead of working for a star, you study them instead, or the things that are around them.
Exactly.
I have a joke I tell my students. I have a little, I don't know, I don't even know if it's real, but there's a company where you could buy plots of land on Mars. Like, I don't even know if it's a real deal thing, but I have like a little map of where, yeah, I don't know if that's real. It's probably fake, but I always show the kids that when it's time to talk about space. And I'm always hoping that NASA's little rovers get close to my plot of land. And then I have to say they're trespassing and they have to pay me money to come do their little sciences on my plot of land on Mars, but they're so far away, it's not going to happen ever. And then the morph to from chemistry to astrochemistry to NASA, how did that come about? That's a dream of a lot of people who get into science, of working and working in outer space or working with outer space, and then getting to NASA. How did that come about?
So I initially transferred into Chicago State with a scholarship. It was called Shy Sci. So it mainly covered like my tuition and stuff of that nature. And, nice. I saw that they had like a NASA space grant consortium. I wanted to be a forensic chemist. So I wanted to be like people on Criminal Minds. I wanted to be on the crime scene or be in the morgue. NASA, everybody's like, wait, what? How did that wait? I scratched the record on that one. So I wanted to help the people, right? And yep. What drove me to say like, oh, I want to work at NASA is that I saw that they had a space grant consortium and that they get like space grants. And I was just like, oh, I said these words, oh, I don't want to work, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to become an astronomer or a space scientist, but I really think it'll be cool that I worked at NASA. And that was, and so my former advisor sent me to my other former advisor at the time. So she didn't know she would be my last advisor graduating. We didn't know this coming. That was the end all game. We didn't know that. But we knew that, okay, Ashley wants to intern at NASA at least once. So go work in astronomy. And we had an astronomer at the school at the time. And yep. So I went and talked to the astronomer that was at Chicago State. And yeah, sometimes, you know, they say you speak things into existence. And I definitely did that because I didn't, after taking basic astronomy and start doing astronomy research, I didn't think twice about forensics.
You were all in on space.
After that, yeah. So it kind of was like the 5-year-old in me was yelling and was screaming. And so that's something that like has been happening a lot lately with me, that if something good is going on. The little girl is just like, yes, yes, yes. So she's very excited right now. And I said it literally 5 years ago. I was just like, okay, I think it'll be cool to work at NASA, but I didn't want to be an astronomer. And plot twist, I am now an astronomer.
Sometimes the mind doesn't know what the heart wants. That's a quote that I keep hearing that from scientists sometimes, is they were on a path that they thought they wanted, but when their heart found the right path, they never ever thought twice about where their passion was taking them. I know your heart can't think, but it makes for a good quote.
Right.
Hey, can we talk about the planets you study or the moons that you study? So Titan is this amazingly cool moon. Mm-hmm. And for people like, we have a broad spectrum of people that listen to the science podcast. This is a two-part question, so we might take some time to get through it. The first part is, can you explain to everybody, first off, what Titan is and why we would want to study it? And maybe the second part is, what are the scientific kind of analysis techniques you use to study stuff that we actually can't get to physically?
So Titan is one of Saturn's many moons. We just found out it has an additional 20 moons. So,
oh my goodness.
Right. How do you have additional 20 moons? So one of Saturn's 82 moons. It is the second largest moon behind Ganymede. And somebody actually, I'm currently hosting Real Scientists, and someone said, How about we make Ganymede a planet, and that way Titan could be the largest moon, which is hilarious to me. And so, so what we know about Titan is that it is very similar to early Earth. And seeing how similar it is to early Earth makes us understand it even more. And there's been a few flyby missions and, you know, checking Titan out to see, like, what's all the fuss about, right? And there's been a few, but I think that we want to study Titan because we want to see something Earth-like. And that's something that we've been trying to find for decades. And it's really cool to understand, to see that Titan has some of the same similarities as we do here on Earth. And going now to the more scientific questions. So Titan, you know, it rains there. Rumor has it, it has rainbows. You can also
find Titan.
So if
it has rainbows potentially. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I'm so sorry, Ashley. I'm just, my mind is blown.
So it potentially has rainbows from what I'm hearing. That's word on the streets. it also, you can also fly. If you take two cardboard boxes, you can fly. And you can, like, so for example, if we're on Titan, you know, someone getting on your nerve, y'all can have a Mortal Kombat duke out. I think that would be awesome. I will pay for that. But it also has a hydrocarbon cycle, similarly to our water cycle here. So it has methane and ethane lakes and rivers and oceans. It also has methane and ethane clouds. So it does not have any oxygen. However, the atmosphere is mostly composed of nitrogen. We go about studying this through remote sensing, and we also go about studying it through laboratory experiments. And like we had previous flyby missions that will bring back that'll pick up certain things that are there and send it back to us. So via satellite, obviously. And telescope. So we're trying to see, like, what possible potential life could it be there? And when we say life, we don't always necessarily mean aliens, but life could mean like water. Life could be like plants, things of that nature. We're also looking at what it could be like geologically. So understanding, you know, the molecules, the chemistry behind Titan, because Titan has so much chemistry there. It's just rich full of it. And everybody's like, ooh, this is good, because you get a chance to see all this chemistry stuff, and it can make your head hurt. And Titan is also a jerk, too, by the way. I love Titan, but it can be a jerk because the atmosphere is so thick and dense, you know, it's hard to, like, see, in which why I'm so excited about the new up-and-coming Dragonfly mission. With Johns Hopkins, Applied Physics Lab, and NASA. So I'm very much excited about this.
Is that Dragonfly? Now, this is kind of crazy. The very first podcast episode we ever did on the Science Podcast, the science article that I talked about was this mission. And it's some kind of drone, isn't it? If I'm remembering what this thing is going to be, like, it flies, right?
Yes, it's a rotorcopter. Yep.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy. Now, you said it rains on Titan. What is it? I don't think it's not water, right?
No. But it does have, like, water, like, within, like, it's like ice water around the cap. So it's like, it's so weird for me to explain it, because I only do this with pictures, and I'm like, look, that's the water. That's the ice water. Okay, move on. Next slide. So it's so weird because it does have, like, it's believed to have ice water around it throughout the whole moon, like in like a little circle. But we want to see if it does have actual water potentially there. But no, it does not rain water. So that's something that was so cool to us, that we were just like, oh, it doesn't rain water. It rains other things.
Mm-hmm. So to study the chemistry of Titan when it's shrouded in clouds, like a dense layer, what instruments do you guys, like, is there satellite data that you use and run it through some of your sciencey stuff?
Pretty much, yeah. So okay. We look, pretty much. So, you know, Cassini, that, you know, crashed into Saturn, you know, went around and was like, hey, Titan, we're here to take some data and then we're going to leave. And that's basically what Cassini did before it crashed. So, right. That's like the most brief. That's like the most brief way I can explain it. And so, we wanted to see, you know, some of the things that were happening there, and we wanted to know about the data. So again, it'll get sent back to us, and folks like me who are laboratory scientists and attempting to be computational chemists and computational astronomers. Folks like me, we simulated in the lab and to see what molecules were there.
Okay, I gotcha. That's awesome. Thank you for explaining that.
No problem. When you think of a lab scientist, that's what I do.
Yeah, but if you're studying something that's orbiting a giant planet out in outer space, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, that's an awesome little kind of like end to that section about what Titan is and maybe how scientists like you study it. One of the things we always ask our guests for, kind of in the middle of the podcast, is for a pet story. Everybody who listens to the podcast loves pets because we mix science with pets. Do you have a pet story you could share with us?
Oh my God, I have. So my beautiful baby girl Precious is actually right here. I'm going to wake her up, see if she's going to make some noise. Oh, you didn't do it this time. Any other time she does it, she's ow! This time she did. She's just like, I want you to rub me while I roll around. So, about my oldest cat and his mother. And my oldest cat, his name is Pepper, and his mother's name was Miss Honey. And so Miss Honey, she lived to be 26 years old.
Wow.
She lived to be 26. She lived on the streets for 19 years until one of my neighbors, which I call her Pepper's grandma, until she came and got all the kittens. Pepper got stuck in a storm drain when he was about 3 or 4 months. And he got stuck. And so when he got stuck, he had to go to the pet the kitty hospital, obviously. He had to go to the vet. And while he was at the vet, I didn't know I was getting ready to walk home and have an animal for Valentine's Day. I didn't know I was going to have a cat. And so we had been feeding Pepper and his family for a while. We had been feeding them. And so no matter what day it was, we'd feed them fish. We'd make sure, you know, they were well taken care of. And so one day I came home. My mom was on the phone at work. I mean, my mom's on the phone with me when I'm coming home from work. And I hear her whispering. I'm like, why is she whispering? I'm like, is it a baby there? And I'm loud. I'm like, is a baby there? She was just like, yeah, something like that. I get home, there's a cat, and it was Pepper. So I got Pepper, and we ended up losing Miss Honey 2 years ago. Miss Honey was a very, very sweet cat, but she bought me my Pepper, and so now Pepper has a companion. Her name is Precious, and she is his wife, and I am the ordained kitty priest. So on my Instagram, on my private Instagram account, I do Cat Chronicles. And so Cat Chronicles is pretty much looking at the day-to-day life of my cats and the outrageousness they do. So sometimes I record their fights. Sometimes I record their fights, and my mom's like, break it up. I'm like, I'm not getting involved in that. And their fights aren't even really bad, because Pepper is the one that lived in the streets. I have another cat. I have Pepper, Precious, and Smokey. And Smokey, he's all black. He's a really big cat, but he's sensitive. And he's a crybaby. And he's so amazing. Most folks come, and when they come visit me, Smokey is the one. Hello. Hi. So my cousins are supposed to be coming later on today for the holiday. And they're coming from Atlanta. And he's waiting on his favorite little cousin, because him and my little cousin, they run around, they play. Aww. And then she picks him up, because he's three. She picks him up by his neck, but yet Smokey still goes to her. I don't get it. I'm like, no, that's not how you pick it up. That's how you pick up a baby. No. But she loves him. She loves him, and he loves her. Like, they sleep together. They run and play. Yeah, it's very cute. So
it sounds like Cat Chronicles could be the next big hit on YouTube, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to make it there. I'm trying to get it there, because they do some outrageous things.
So they fight a bit, but do they normally get along? Do they snuggle together? Do they play together?
They all love each other dearly.
Sounds like they're a good crew to help you with boosting your mental health on tough days. That's nothing boosts my mood more than the dogs that we have, Bunsen and Beaker.
Yeah.
Because Beaker is a puppy. Bunsen puts up with her ridiculousness, and he's such a giant, big, gentle soul. When they play, she is like ferocious and bites his like neck fur, because he's got this great big kind of like Bernese Mountain Dog fluff in the front. And then she'll just hang on that, and he'll walk around and drag her around the house. So it's hilarious. So funny. Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing your pet story. That's great, Ashley.
No problem.
Get back to some of the more serious questions. One of the ones I have, it's kind of a big right turn here. One of the big questions I have for you is, on Twitter, you've been really outspoken about the Black Lives Matter movement. And being one of the only minorities in astrochemistry in really just about the whole world. I mean, there's probably more than yourself, but there's not very many. How can society help make barriers less to get more folks into the STEM field?
Well, a lot of times, Black students are often interested in science. And so when they're interested in science, we want, as a community as a whole, we want to make sure they stay on that path and that track. And so if they're on that path and track, we can, you know, continuously guide them. Now, for in terms of like barriers, I mean, you have Black students that have been racially harassed, so on and so forth, in terms of leaving the field and just so many different things that has happened, right? And even sometimes it'll be just like for their mental, a lot of times it's for their mental sanity, why they'll leave, or, you know, why they felt like going a different route is a better fit for them. One thing I've always questioned is I always wanted to know who would have been the first African-American woman astrochemist. That's a question that has been burning all six of our minds, because the six of us currently that will eventually have our PhDs during this decade. Mm-hmm. And we're the first six. And we're trying to literally wreck our brain about who would have been the first. What's her name? Where is she? Can we talk to her? And that's something that we'll right now, it's stumping us right now. However, what other folks can do to help is speak up, read literature, do a self-reflection. And when I say do a self-reflection, you know, just think about times where, you know, for professors that are listening, think about times where you thought you were helping someone and you thought it was the best idea, but actually it ended up being gatekeeping and hurting this individual. For example, I was told to do science communication for a PhD instead of astrochemistry. And although they thought that they were helping me, it was actually hurting me because I want a PhD in astrochemistry, or doing astrochemistry research. So being that right there is very, you know, it's very telling, and it's saying like, I think it's fine that you want to do that, but I think this would be better suited for you. Although it is really telling that I really don't believe it. That's what it's telling the Black student. Other things is making sure that you, again, speak up for them. If we know that there's someone in the department that has unconscious bias, racist motives, activities, still holding up the same values of white supremacy, if you know that's going on in the department or in the school, you want to stand up for your Black students. And not just standing up because, you know, this is going to give me brownie points with the student in the community, but this will push my student, you know, I'm pushing for my student. I'm rooting for my student. I want my student to succeed, because it's very, very hard for Black folks. So you want to support your Black colleagues and the Black teachers and Black professors, because they need support too. You want to make sure that if they're fighting for something and they're not getting support from everyone else, they want to make sure they got that support from you. And I mean, don't say, oh, I'm going to support you. No, if you know that you can help them push that through, push it through. In addition to that, you want to make sure that you just don't say that I'm going to support you again, that you are going to, that you're physically going to be there. You can always, and also donate to, you can donate. There's a bunch of different, organizations that you can donate to, one being the African American Women in Physics, which is AAWIP.org. African American Women in Physics. We celebrate Black women being in physics, astronomy, and adjacent, in physics and astronomy adjacent fields. So anything related within physics and astro that's in the realm, it could be geosciences, it could be PCHEM, things of in that nature, you can definitely support them there. your student during this time, a lot of Black students' mental health is like shot. I know mine is shot. So you can definitely make sure you could just stop by and say, hey, how are you doing? I want to make sure that you're okay. That's something that a lot of people aren't thinking about doing or are afraid to do. But just reach out and say, hey, I'm thinking about you. I'm worried about you. How are you doing? And trust me, you'll probably get a positive response about reaching out. Because, again, show that you care. Because, you know, our Black lives matter. And, you know, being in astronomy, it's not that many of us. And, you know, we find community within each other, which is like, you know, something that is really great. But we also want our white counterparts and our non-Black counterparts to be supportive in helping us grow as a community and helping, you know, call to action for change. Because, you know, again, it's not that many of us and we would love to have more, but we cannot fight this fight alone.
That's such a great message. It's such a huge, massive topic, but it seems like it just boils down to listening and empathy is what it all seems to boil down to. And then listening to people's words when they speak, taking somebody's story and believing it. I hope that's the big change that happens, is that all of these stories, there was some kind of hashtag that was posted about that, about people of color and Black folks in science and all of the microaggressions and racism that they were subjected to.
Yep,
and it's a realm I've never been a part of. And over the last year, I've really reevaluated how I've taught things. Like in our curriculum, we go over the early scientists, right? And guess what color skin all of the early scientists I teach my kids are? They're all white, right? Mm-hmm. They're all these white, old, dead guys. And that's really reevaluated, like, do I even need to talk about some of these guys who had wrong theories about the atom? Maybe I'm just like, okay, this person was wrong, and we'll just move on and maybe find somebody else that a student in my class could connect with better. So I hope people who are out there listening to this take that to heart, your message of understanding, inclusion, and empathy.
No problem. And also making sure that they support Black authors. And if they have small children, read these books. Netflix has a series. Amazon has a series, has a bunch of series of Black shows and things that can help you look from the Black perspective. Yes, Precious. Precious is now back with us. And so, and help us, you know, help folks understand, you know, what we go through as a people. Because again, not all of us live in safe neighborhoods. Not all of us live in areas where we can get things resolved safely without things being escalated. We want to make sure people know that Black lives do matter. And, you know, I mean, someone said this when I was, I said, can we amplify Black astronomer, the hashtag Black and Astro, and showing that Black astronomers exist. And a comment someone said was like, well, didn't astronomy start from you all anyway? And I was like, thank you. That was like my main point. I was like, yeah, that was my point. So, you know, we want to show that, you know, this has been a connection between Black people and astronomy has been there for a very long time. And that we've been here, and that not all of us have the luxury of just being safe.
You know, that's such a great comment. Like, let's end with something positive, because the first humans, like our mm-hmm. ancestors, were Black and lived in yep. Africa and used the stars to navigate the plains of Africa. That's so cool. I never even thought about that. I'm definitely going to bring that up when I teach space in school. That's so cool.
Yep.
Okay, so we're getting really close to the end of the interview. And one of the things I always ask and all of our listeners look forward to is the super fact. Can you share with us a super fact, something that you know that when you tell people, it blows their mind? And I mean, we had a really great chat and it was really heartfelt about the Black Lives Matter, but you also blew my mind with Titan. Do you have another fact you could share with us?
Sure. So another fact on, I think I shared all my Titan facts. But outside of it raining, I believe it's methane that it rains. Because I didn't say what it rained, but I did say it rained. I did say it was raining.
I was wondering, you were being a little coy with that. I was wondering. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I heard it rains. I heard it rains methane. So that's just a rumor that I heard. So I hear a lot of rumors. So that's something, too, that I liked outside of flying, the whole hydrocarbon cycle. And seeing what the geology on Titan could be is going to be such an amazing discovery when we find out in 2034, which is so long from now.
It's 14 years.
I know. That's a long time. But we're going to be, we'll be excited, though. We'll be very, very, very excited. Like, that's going to be like the coolest thing ever. So. Yeah. Yeah, that's something. I'm excited to hear about the rainstorms and if, you know, what the clouds are made of, because I'm also a huge fan of clouds. Mm-hmm. I'm just really excited to see how far Dragonfly is going to go.
I can't wait either. And I hope I'm around then, and I'll be checking Twitter if it exists. And I'll be looking for tweets at that time from Dr. Walker about the amazing Titan discoveries.
Of course.
Yeah, 14 years is a long time. 2020 has felt like 14 years. So we'll get there.
You know, I was getting ready to say, like, that's a long time, but I think I should, you know, by that time, you know, I'll be married and divorced from Michael B. Jordan, as I keep telling everyone I'm his future ex. with our one child.
I love
it. So by that time, you know, I'll have my own talk show, and the planetarium, the People of Color Planetarium, will be up and running for many years by that time. So we'll get a chance to see a real glimpse of what's going on Titan.
The future sounds so cool when you say it that way. That's great. Well, this brings us to the end of the interview. Thanks so much for having a chat with us today, Ashley, about Titan space and some really important issues. Where can people find you on social media if they want to follow you and connect?
So you can follow me on Twitter at my handle is @that_astro_chick without the K, because Twitter didn't want to give me a K. And you can also find me on Instagram at Ashley_the_astrochemist.
In the podcast show notes, I will have a link to the, I believe it was the AAWIP. We'll have a link to that as well, because you spoke that people could donate to that cause.
Yep.
I'm so excited for the future now about Titan. There's so many cool things in outer space, and having people like you work on it and inspiring others to follow in your footsteps it makes my heart full for the future of science.
Well, thank you. Thank you so very much.
You take care of yourself, Ashley, and have a great day.
You too.
Hey, everybody. I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Genius Lab Gear. Genius Lab Gear is giving everybody 10% off everything at their store if you use the code BUNSEN10. That's BUNSEN 10. Genius Lab Gear has a ton of cool stuff. We love that they sent Bunsen a bandana that says PhD Emotional Support Dog. It's so cute. Also, they have these little wallet-sized stencils for doing organic molecules. And if you're not a scientist or a science teacher, there's gear at the site that you would like as well, including Sciences for Everyone stickers and a whole bunch of other stuff. Check them out. That's at geniuslabgear.com. It's time for Woo or Wow on the Science Podcast. And my co-host this week is Kathy Zerker. How are you doing today, Kathy?
I'm doing great, Jason. How about you?
I'm doing good. And this is round two for you as a co-host. And you were on Woo or Wow once before, and you were one of our patrons. So first off, thank you for supporting the podcast. And second, thanks for having another shot at Woo or Wow.
I'm happy to do it. It's fun.
Yay. Now, we had talked last time. You have two dogs, I think two, and one and one was at the time a little, or not so little, more puppy stage Bernese Mountain Dog named Ella. How is Ella doing now?
Ella's doing great. It's kind of a challenge raising a puppy during COVID because she can't get the socialization she should have, especially with other dogs and people. So we're trying to work on keeping her from jumping on people because she gets so excited when she sees anybody. And that's not an easy thing. But for a 70-plus-pound dog at almost 9 months old, it's essential.
Yeah, that's true. The big dogs are generally super gentle, but they don't know how powerful they are. So a little tiny miniature schnauzer that tries to jump on you, you barely feel it. But a big Bernese Mountain Dog will knock you over.
Absolutely.
I was outside playing with it. Well, I wasn't playing with them. My favorite time of the last like month since we've had Beaker is at night. I just go out and I lay in my hammock and I watch the two of them play for about an hour. Uh-huh. But I got up and Bunsen was roaring around and he was being chased by Beaker and he crashed into me and sent me flying. He body checked me and I went flying. Like I was jumping out of the way. But it was like, I don't know if you've seen on bloopers where somebody's jumping just a little bit, but they get their legs taken out by a sled or a fast moving creature. Yeah. Yeah. That was me. Nobody videotaped it though. Otherwise that definitely would have been on Twitter.
Oh, that's a shame. No one got that. Sorry for you, but.
and for the people listening in the background, if you hear some noise, that's just Beaker and Bunsen playing. Beaker's in the mood this morning. She is full of macaroni. She is ready to go. So,
well, Ella was like that earlier, but we took her for a nice 2-mile walk. So she's calm now.
Smart. I should have done that with Beaker. All right. You ready to get to the trivia?
Yes, I am.
The theme for Woo or Wow this week is space moons.
Okay. I'll give it a try.
Moons that are in outer space. So we have one natural satellite, but this is about other satellites of other planets. Mm-hmm. And it goes with the guests that we're having on this week. So that's the idea of the theme.
Great.
Do you look up at the stars and look at the constellations at night, or do you have a telescope?
No, I don't. And you know, it's too bad because when I was in junior high, I was really into that because I had a science teacher who took us all out one evening to look at the stars. But I haven't done that in a long time. Actually, the last time I did any, my husband and I were in Hawaii. And there is the Hyatt Hotel on Maui has this thing you can sign up for in the evening, or they did. They take you up on the roof, and they have a person who is a special scientist in astronomy, and he brings his giant telescopes up. Oh, it was wonderful. It was great.
My family has been very lucky to go to Hawaii and it was the same situation at night. We were really, really up high on Kona, the big island. A guy had a giant reflecting telescope. So we got to actually look at some of the things we're going to talk about today.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. All right. So, for those of you who are listening, just a little recap. I read three statements. Two of them are fake. They are woo. And one of them is true. It's a wow. And Kathy, you have to find the true statement among the fake ones. So you ready to go?
I'm ready to guess.
All right. The first statement. Io is one of the largest moons of Jupiter. And it's known as a world of fire and ice. Because not only does it have volcanoes, which spew their guts into outer space, it also has sulfur dioxide snowflakes.
Wow.
Have you heard of Io, one of the moons of Jupiter?
I've heard of it, but I don't know a lot about it. But
the second statement, Ganymede is an enormous moon. It's the biggest one in our entire solar system, and it's about the size of Venus.
Okay.
Hey, next one?
Yep.
Sorry, this is a tricky one for you, maybe.
It is, but it's okay. I'm taking notes so I can remember.
Oh, smart, smart. Okay. The last statement, the Jovian moons around Jupiter are sometimes known as the Newtonian moons, as it was Isaac Newton who first discovered them.
Okay.
Would you like a recap, or was your note-taking system sufficient?
My note-taking is good, but why don't you recap it? Because as a listener, I always appreciate that.
Okay, the first statement. Io is one of the moons that orbit Jupiter. It's known as a world of fire and ice because not only does it have volcanoes, it also has sulfur dioxide snowflakes. The second statement. Ganymede is an enormous moon, the biggest in our solar system, and about the size of Venus. The third statement. The Jovian moons that orbit Jupiter are sometimes known as the Newtonian moons, as it was Isaac Newton who first discovered them.
Okay, well, I'm leaning toward number two being woo. It seems huge for a moon in our solar system.
But, right.
So that, just based on that.
Okay.
The first one, I'm kind of leaning toward calling that wow and number three woo, but I have no good reason for that other than the detail was so good on that one. So you've probably fooled me, but I'm going to go with wow being number one.
All right. So let's take a look at the second statement you thought was woo. You're correct. Ganymede is an enormous moon, and it is the biggest one in our solar system. It's not as big as Venus. Venus is about the size of Earth, but Ganymede is bigger than Mercury. So it's a huge moon. Yeah, it is a very, very, very big moon.
So
good job on that one. You're right to see that one as being fishy. Did you know ahead of time how big Venus was, or you just thought that sounded way too big?
No, I knew Venus was about the same size as Earth, and that seemed really big for a moon. Yeah.
Okay, good job. All right, so we're down to two statements. You thought the first one about Io was true. Mm-hmm. And if you were right, you win. Mm. You are correct. It is a true statement. Good job, Kathy.
Yay!
You got it. Io is a bizarre moon. It's full of these crazy volcanoes. There's over 400 volcanoes on Io. It has the most active volcanoes of any place in our entire solar system. And some of the volcanoes / mountains on it are taller than Mount Everest.
It
is an insane place. Also, it's so cold and without an atmosphere, the gas that forms, sulfur dioxide, snows. So there are sulfur dioxide snowflakes on Io, which is just bizarre when you think of it.
It is. You know, I sort of in the back of my mind remembered that there were some really interesting things about Io, and that's why I chose it, because what you presented sort of way back in my brain somewhere triggered something.
Good job. Good memory. Now, the last statement is a woo, and I thought I'd catch you, but you're something also maybe in the back of your brain also sniffed that one out as being fake. It wasn't Isaac Newton that discovered the Newtonian moons. It was Galileo Galilei who discovered them, and they're actually called the Galilean moons. So I switched out the scientist. And Galileo didn't name the moons. He just called them 1, 2, 3, 4. And they were later named Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. Those are the four big moons that orbit Jupiter. Yeah, it's crazy. With a proper telescope, with even like a medium powered telescope, and if you know what you're doing, you can see these moons orbit Jupiter. And that references the story I told you when we were in Hawaii. This guy had actually a very powerful telescope. We were up high, there was perfectly clear night, and we got to look at the Jovian moons, the Galilean moons orbit Jupiter. It was crazy. Yeah, it was really neat. Yeah, you can see them move, little points of light moving.
This is cool.
Well, you should be proud of yourself. You've won war. Wow. This one was a tricky one, too. I thought you were going to get tricked up on this one, but you weren't.
Well, this was a lot of fun. And you know what? It makes me want to go back and do some more looking at the stars.
I think everybody should do more of that now. We have time during COVID, right? I don't know if in the United States, if movie theaters and things like that have opened up again, but they're really not in Canada. So there's time at night to do that. So, yeah.
Oh, exactly. And I won't be going back to movie theaters for a while anyway. So
we'll have to wait and see what they do to keep people safe. You're right. Yeah, it's something else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us for We Were Wild this week.
This was so much fun. Thank you, Jason.
Okay, it's time for story time with me, Adam. All right, it's time for story time. If you don't know what story time is because you're new or because you forgot, we are going to talk about stories that have happened in the story time timeline of relevancy, which is like 1 or 2 weeks. Let's get started. Dad, do you have a story?
Okay, so you might have saw on social media, we were in the mountains for the weekend. It was a lot of fun, and we stayed at an Airbnb, so Beaker is very sneaky when doors open. She likes to escape. She's much more slim than Bunsen, we'll say, so it's harder for Bunsen to get by a human. She is like a torpedo. So we were leaving to go kayak in a lake. And I had a big backpack on, and I went through the door, and my backpack got jammed. So I couldn't, I kind of like stopped. And that gave Beaker the opportunity to shoot out the door and into kind of like the parking lot. Now, it was fairly safe for her. I mean, we had to get her right away, but I wasn't like too super concerned she was going to get hit by a car because it's like the parking lot of a, you know, a condo area. But anyways, she ran right down, two doors down to an open door where a family had the door open to kind of like cool off the condos, and she just ran right inside. Now, the other family told me after that the kids and the family has no experience with dogs. Like, they're not dog people. And Beaker just all of a sudden showed up amongst all of these kids who were like having their breakfast watching cartoons, and all of a sudden there was this puppy in their midst, and they were shrieking. That's what, like, by the time I got out of the doorway, she was already in there and the screaming had started, and these little kids were running around the coffee table screaming as Beaker was like trying to say hello to them, and they're like, "Where is that?" screaming and like jumping on furniture. And the parents were kind of stunned. Like, I think it was two families or three families that were all congregating in the one condo. And they weren't getting Beaker, so I had to run into this other family's condo and scoop up Beaker while these terrified kids with crocodile tears streaming down their face looked upon Beaker like she was a monster. Now, the parents who were outside were laughing. They thought it was the funniest thing. They weren't mad at all. I guess they said it was going to be a story that they'll remember for the rest of their life. But I was a little mortified, and I had to experience that myself. I brought Beaker right back to our Airbnb, and Adam saw her, and Adam's like, "Boy, Beaker looks so happy," because she was so happy. So her favorite thing is terrorizing small children, and that's my story.
So there's another check that Beaker is slowly trying to kill us all. Anyway, I have a story, and it happened in the mountains as well. We went kayaking on a lake, and I don't remember the lake's name, and I bet my parents don't, because they had one heck of a time getting there. But anyway, I was kayaking, Beaker was in the front with me, and Bunsen was in the back with Dad, and Beaker was chilling out for the most part of the trip. But on the way back, about halfway, she decided, I'm done being in the kayak, and jumped off the side. And, That was kind of scary, but Dad picked her up by her life jacket, like a briefcase, and just threw her back in. And then I had to sit there with a wet, gross muskrat in front of me. Just, I had to kind of deal with that, because she was like, I'm not going back in there, it's too cold. But yeah, on the way back, she was shivering. Mom, do you have any stories?
Beaker and I have been doing some bonding over a Canadian content show. We've been recently introduced to a show that was on television from 2015 to 2020, I believe. But we just started watching it now, and it's called Schitt's Creek. And I love it. I think it's just great. Anyway, the shows are about 20 minutes long. And I was given the opportunity to do a little bit of binge watching right before our trip. Jason put in a load of laundry, and I went downstairs, and there was an error message on the machine. I thought, what? I've never seen this error message before. And I Googled it, and it's SD, which means that you put in too much laundry detergent because it's a suds warning. So I went up to Jason and I said, hey, how much detergent did you put in the machine? And he said, oh, just a whole capful. And I said, for that size of load? And he said, oh, yes, this is how I do laundry. And I said, well, maybe that's the reason why our machine has been kind of pumping out clothes that have a little bit of schmutz on them. And he said,
How does laundry detergent make schmutz?
Yeah, he said, you put a clean thing on to get them clean and they come out dirty? That is a paradox. And I said, oh, I agree. Anyway, so what happened was I had to run through like the rinse and spin until about midnight before I was able to clear the machine of the suds. But that gave me the opportunity to have the cuddliest Beaker and binge watch Schitt's Creek on the couch with her. So I enjoyed that time with her and the show. Win-win. And win because the laundry was cleaned. Yay!
All right, so that's been story time with me, Adam. And I will see you guys next time for, I don't know, maybe the mailbag, maybe story time. That has been story time. I will see you guys next time. Bye-bye!
And that's the end of another week's podcast episode. Thanks so much for tuning in, folks. This was such a fun show, and our expert guest, Ashley Walker, delighted us with tales about studying the icy moons of Saturn and some really important issues in society. So thanks, Ashley. I'd also like to give a shout out to our top tier patrons. Without their support on the Patreon page, the podcast wouldn't be what it is today. Take it away, Chris.
Andrea Persons, Bianca Hyde, Brooke Lavallo, Shelby Leggett, Daniel Fry, Elizabeth Bourgeois, Judith Morton, Karen Beth St. George, Catherine Lynch, Kathleen Zerker, Mary Coos, Marianne McNally, Ben Rathert, Liz Button, and Rebecca Rutherford.
As always, let's end with the motto of the Science Podcast. For science, empathy, and cuteness.